I'm Pat Morrison. There are many, many more people in the United States waiting for organs to be transplanted than there are people willing to donate those organs, or in part, perhaps, unable to donate those organs. This is complicated by the fact that doctors have a difficult time sometimes drawing the line where death actually occurs, and minutes mean a great deal in organ transplant situations. The actual definition of death, is it heart death, is it brain death, has perplexed those people who are responsible for transplants, both on the consideration from the point of view of whoever is donating the organs and from the point of view of those receiving those organs, because the viability of organs is all dependent on time. So when death occurs is a subject that is being bruited about with an eye to these sorts of transplant concerns, as outlined in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine by Dr. Darshak Sanghavi, who is the chief of pediatric cardiology at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He's also Slate's healthcare columnist, and this article, The Last Decision, is about this discussion over cardiac death and brain death and how it affects organ donation. Dr. Sanghavi, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Most lay people would think that you die when you stop breathing. Is that not the case medically?
Well, that's certainly true. In the old days, which is not so long ago, I guess, the deceased was considered dead when you were cold, blue, and stiff. But as we understand now, death really occurs along a continuum. It's really hard to precisely identify when that happens. And it's become much more critical to define a precise time, especially because we're interested in salvaging organs from patients who are interested in donating them.
In 1981, there was what was called the Uniform Determination of Death Act, which defined death as the irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain, including the brain stem. But this kind of death is rare, at least to the point where organs can still be considered usable.
That's right. That model state law was really the culmination of a long process that had begun almost in the 1950s when the first organ transplant had been done. And it really tried to thread this sort of ethical needle, which is how is it that you can really identify to some extent, a dead body, but one that had live organs. And so this was sort of the compromise that was reached, was that perhaps we could define somebody as being dead if their brain was dead, but their body was actually alive. And at the time, that was actually quite controversial.
The controversy, comes in part from the sensitivity, the concern that you will be taking organs from somebody who, in one technical sense or another, is still alive.
That's right, and that's certainly a concern that many Americans have today. In polls, it seems that many people are concerned that their organs might be procured, or the old word for that was harvested, while they're still alive. That's something that most physicians feel is extremely unlikely and probably almost impossible, but it's still a common fear of many people.
This is not an abstract discussion among doctors. It's a very vital one because, as I pointed out earlier, there are so many people waiting for organs and so few organs that become available that even people who are willing to have their own, by advance consent or family members' organs taken and donated, sometimes find their wishes thwarted because of this line of definition of death.
That's right. Putting it in perspective, there's roughly 100,000 people that are waiting for organs now, and there's fewer than 8,000 deceased donors every year. In the past, it was thought that only brain-dead donors could be suitable candidates for organ transplantation. Because there's this tremendous need for organs and people are dying because they can't get them, over the past few years, and this is what my article is really about, there's been a move to almost liberalize the definition of who could be an organ donor. And part of that depends on, to some extent, a more liberalized definition of death.
And you tell a couple of stories, one of a very little girl and the other of a teenager who died in very unfortunate accidents. And their parents very much wanted to know that their lives were going on in some way by, for example, donating their organs, donating a heart or some other organ. And just this definition, this line, made it impossible for them to do that. Can you describe what happened to them?
Yes. These are really tragic stories, but to some extent also allude to the strength of the families. In one of them, there was a little girl whose mother was clearing a snow path in New Hampshire, and she fell, and this is really tragic. The strings from her coat were sucked into the snow machine and actually strangled this girl. After several weeks, it became clear that although she wasn't brain dead, she still was so neurologically devastated that she would never live a life that was meaningful to her or her parents. This was in their estimation. And so the parents said, well, since she's not going to live a meaningful life, can we give her organs to somebody who really needs them? The holdup is that she wasn't considered brain dead, even though she was neurologically devastated, she couldn't breathe on her own. She did actually blink an eye if you touched it, but this is really a reflex that doesn't indicate any meaningful conscious activity. And so the question was, is there any way that the organs can be procured? The parents wanted to do this, the physicians felt comfortable, the transplant surgeons felt comfortable, and the recipients also obviously would really love the opportunity to have healthy organs, but the child wasn't considered dead.
So what happened in this case, both to the child and to the organs that her family wanted so much to donate to another child?
So what happened was this process, which is called donation after cardiac death. In addition to being considered brain dead, the law in 1981 also defines death as the irreversible cessation of cardiac activity. Now, that's a mouthful, what that means is when your heart stops, you can be considered dead. So what is happening now, and this is one of the fastest-growing ways that organs are now transplanted, is that there's this choreographed kind of really modern and somewhat artificial way people die. You go to an operating room, and this is with the consent of the family and everybody who's involved, and you have to actually remove the breathing tube or any life support and wait for the person's heart to stop.
For 5 minutes, you wrote.
Yep.
An almost arbitrary number.
Exactly. And this is really, really difficult for people to define. After the heart stops, how long do you wait before you're considered dead in order to procure somebody's organs?
You have a very telling moment of a surgical nurse standing there looking at her watch, essentially doing a countdown.
That's right. And so the time that many people had agreed on was about 5 minutes. And so one of the things that I describe is being in the operating room as this is done and waiting for this countdown, which is really a weird thing to actually observe. And in that situation, at 4 minutes and 30 seconds, we saw this little blip on the monitor, and we didn't know what that was.
And it could have been anything. It could have been a little bit of static electricity, perhaps?
That's right. That's right. But I think that really dramatized how much judgment there is and how this really is this process that, you know, we try to understand, but really ultimately is a little bit uncertain.
And so at the 4 minute, 30 second mark, when you saw this little blip, you had no choice but to take the patient back to ICU. And what happened?
Right. Well, to be clear, I was just observing that time. But in the case of this one that I observed, actually at 4 minutes and 30 seconds, we saw this blip. And then the person who was supervising really felt this did not really represent meaningful cardiac activity, waited 30 more seconds and declared the patient dead. And instantly, the surgeons go ahead and put in an incision and remove the organs, because every minute that you wait, even every 30 seconds that you wait, is harming the organs because they're not getting oxygen at that time.
And there was a very touching moment where the surgeon said something.
Yeah, I think one thing that became very clear as I researched this piece and talked to lots of families and even observed these is the incredible care that goes into this process. And one of these touching moments is just before the surgeon made the incision here, he just paused. The operating room felt totally silent, and he said, "Let us take a moment now to ponder the gift that has been given this day." And he stopped just for a few seconds. and then he went ahead and procured the organs. And that kind of respect, I felt, was present really in many, many places.
And there were also circumstances, and this is where I got confused, where in fact there was imminent death by every definition, and any little sign had to be interpreted as a sign of life. And so the patient was taken back into ICU, some kind of care, and the organs became unusable eventually.
That's right. In the case of that little girl who had that horrible strangulation accident with the snowblower, her parents waited in the operating room. They removed the breathing tube, and she sort of gasped for breath intermittently, and her heart did not stop. So she went back to the intensive care unit and then died after a few hours there, and her organs were never able to be transplanted. And that really hurt the parents, and I think that's a wound that they really carry to this day, that they weren't, the organs to some extent went, I don't know if this is the right word, but they went to waste.
And at the end of the story in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine, you describe another family, another mother whose child's death ended up in the donation of several organs, including a heart, and she wanted more than anything else to hear her child's heart beating in this other child's chest, to know that her child had gone on.
There's something about a child's heart that really resonates with parents. They really feel that that's where the child's life is. And one of the really difficult things about the heart is that typically, as we talked about, you had to wait 5 minutes after the heart stopped before you declared a patient dead. There's no law that says that. And so about a year ago, there was a team in Denver that actually said, there's no reason for us to wait 5 minutes. Why don't we just wait a little bit over 1 minute? That was incredibly controversial, but that's the amount of time that's the maximum amount of time that the heart could have withstood. And so these were individuals who felt so strongly that their children were going to have no meaningful life that they felt that after a minute, it would be okay to declare their children dead. That's the story we tell.
You're listening to Dr. Darshak Sanghavi, whose story appears in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. It's called The Last Decision. Maybe some of these issues about organ donation resonate with you. Maybe you have had to confront these issues with your own family. Call us and tell us your stories at 866-893-KPCC. Maybe you have some ideas of your own about when these decisions should be made, as doctors consider them too. 866-893-5722 is how you can tell us your thinking. You can go to the Pat Morrison page at kpcc.org to share your ideas, or call 866-893-KPCC. D1. In this Sunday's New York Times Magazine, an article entitled The Last Decision. It's about donation after cardiac arrest, a cardiac death, about how difficult it is to determine from medical and from essentially ethical points of view about when death takes place, and how difficult it is, particularly when the loved ones of the deceased in question want to donate the organs, as the optimum time frame for organ donation is a fleeting one. Dr. Darshak Sanghavi is the chief of pediatric cardiology at the University of Massachusetts Medical School and the author of the article. We're taking your calls on this topic at 866-893-KPCC. Roger is on the line from Long Beach. Roger, thanks for your call.
Hi there, doctor. Hi, Pat. I was 2 years ago, I had full cardiac arrest and I was fortunate enough to get recovered at Long Beach Memorial Hospital, but I was out for a full minute. And by some measure, if somebody wanted to start harvesting my organs about then, I wouldn't be talking to you now. So I think that 1 minute limit is a little bit brief.
Roger, are you a designated organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, Dr. Sanghavi, what would you do in a case of someone like Rogers?
Well, the issue is that it's important to realize that if I would assume, the doctors are trying very aggressively to resuscitate somebody like Roger. There's no discussion about organ donation at that point. The thing that's important is that these situations where organs are being procured, those are one where there's been a critical injury and a chronic illness, and there's really no hope of meaningful recovery. And so when we talk about waiting a minute or 5 minutes, those are in individuals in whom we're not trying to resuscitate them or bring them back. And this is really how they're being permitted to pass away and move on. So this is absolutely not something that would have been considered in a case like the caller is talking about.
In Palos Verdes, Bill is calling with an example and a question. Bill, thanks for your call.
Yes, a friend of mine recently passed away of a heart attack, and he was 46, and it was a sudden thing. Two young children, and he was on the donor list, or was being able to have his organs donated. And his wife was called twice by the organization. Really kind of strung around for a good hour the first time, and longer than that the second time. Really felt, she felt they were unsympathetic, weren't nice, and then the third time they called back and said, we can't harvest his organs unless you allow us to sell them. And it really, you know, put, she said, I'm never going to go down this road if this is the way these people act.
Bill, was this a hospital?
I don't know. It was whoever calls you to get the approval after you on the list, like on my driver's license, I have a donor stamp.
A little dot, yes.
Right. And she said because he had that on his license, somebody called her, and I didn't ask her the specific organization, but she said the donor people, the people that have to get the authorization, that you have to fill out any forms, you know, he had had a heart attack and was in the hospital, so he was able to, you know, they didn't even call her for about, she had gone back home about 3 or 4 hours later. They didn't even ask her at the hospital. It was later that mm-hmm. she got called.
Dr. Sanghavi, have you ever heard of such a thing?
Yeah, I think that it's important to point out a few things, and it's hard to know what actually occurred in those situations. But I can tell you that this notion about selling organs, I mean, that's a clearly illegal activity. And it's hard for me to understand how that would have been brought up in this area here. I think that what it alludes to even more, though, is that clearly in this case, there was for whatever kind of communication took place, there didn't appear to be a lot of compassion and a lot of meaningful communication between the medical team and this really distraught patient family that had been facing something really tough. And one thing that I know that people struggle with quite a bit is trying to figure out how it is that we can talk better with patients. I mean, not only when you're dealing with organ donation, but any medical situation in general. And I'm sure there's a lot of better work that needs to be done in that area.
And, of course, the illegal trade in harvested organs is something of concern worldwide, less so in this country, which surprised me to hear what Bill had to say. In San Marino, John's waiting on the line. John, let's hear from you.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment that while medically it makes sense to define death as the heart stopping, but with some of the people that have artificial hearts, does it not make sense to define death as the ceasing of the function of the brain?
Right. What you're bringing up is a tough philosophical problem. To be clear, the law defines death in two ways. So the first way is brain death, and the second is the irreversible cessation of the heart. So either way could be used to define death. And those are both important because, at least in the discussion about organ donation, a person could be declared dead by either means, either by brain death, which is the traditional way it was done, or by cardiac death, which is the way that is increasingly done in some places.
Dr. Sanghavi, that leads to a question that you bring up in your article, The Last Decision, which is who decides what the definition of death is, whether it's legal bodies like Congress, whether it's medical bodies, and what's going on with that debate apropos of organ donation?
Yeah, you bring up something which is really interesting, which is that death is actually really defined by each state. And
So you could be considered dead in California but not in Nevada?
In fact, back in the 70s, that actually could happen, where you could be considered dead in North Carolina but not South Carolina, because they actually had different laws regarding what death was. So you had this very weird situation where you could be considered dead, be moved across state lines, and be considered resurrected, I guess. So part of the issue with this law in 1981 was to try to offer a model that could avoid that kind of confusion.
And so is there still that kind of patchwork? Does it vary from state to state, region to region, hospital to hospital, physician to physician?
Yeah, well, what I think that most states do agree on this broad notion of cardiac death and brain death. There's no disagreement about that. The disagreement, though, is now becoming even more complicated. It's how long does one have to wait? So, for example, in Massachusetts, where I live, the standard is 5 minutes after the cessation of cardiac activity. In Denver, it was 75 seconds. And to be clear, there is no law that governs that, so there is no standardization. So, in fact, that's still true, that in Massachusetts you could be considered alive, while at the same person in Denver would have been considered dead.
Much of this seems also to have to do with the wishes of the family, that this isn't simply someone being declared dead. It's being declared dead for purposes of organ donation. How does that color the decision-making process?
I think it makes a huge difference, because one thing that became clear here was that, as one of the ethicists put it, all of the ethical and moral vectors were aligned. That was the phrase he used, because there wasn't any disagreement. The families, for example, wanted to donate organs, and they couldn't understand why they had to wait for a child to be taken off life support, gasp for breath, wait for the heart to stop, and only then be allowed to donate organs. And so I think that that is the crux of the matter here, is that there's no fight between doctors and patients and organ banks. Everybody wants the same thing. It's just that the way the laws are currently written, that is not allowed.
So this isn't like the Terry Schiavo case, where you have a dispute within the family and the medical community and ultimately from members of Congress.
Precisely. And I think that's one thing that's very important to keep in mind, is that almost all organ donations that I've observed or been involved with, there's really no disagreement between members of the team and the family. I think those are really, to be honest, those are outliers.
And so what do you see as the prospect for some universal or uniform standard, or is it really to doctors' advantage to there being some flexibility in these?
There is a uniform standard, which is it's something called the dead donor rule. In other words, currently in the United States, a patient has to be declared dead before organs can be procured, whether or not the family wants it that way. What's the problem, though, is that it's really hard to define what being dead really means. Is it after the heart stops for a little while, a long time? And to be honest, I think that, at least my personal opinion as I've gone through this process, to me, I think death begins when all hope for meaningful life or recovery is no longer present. That might be when you still have some brain activity or a heartbeat. But if there's no hope for recovery and the family and everybody involved in that person's life feels that that person's meaningful life is over, perhaps that's an okay time for the family to consider donating that person's organs so somebody else can live.
And Dr. Sanghavi, before I let you go, have you had to confront this choice often yourself?
I can tell you from personal experience, one thing that was formative to me was, to be honest, when my own father was sick. I don't talk about this in the article, but he had a very rare disease of the lungs where he gets scarred, and over years he became short of breath, and he ended up in an intensive care unit on a breathing machine, and really he was never going to be able to get lungs donated. But what was really hard for all of us was when the time came when we knew he was never going to get better, we were not allowed to simply let him pass away. The laws indicated that you have to stop all the medicines that that paralyze and sedate somebody who's critically ill. And so we were in a situation where we had to remove the medications that were giving him comfort just because that's the only way we could let him die. And that's sort of what moved me, that in a way I understand these laws are designed to protect us, but I think they also can cause harm to us when we have the best intentions of trying to care for our loved ones.
Dr. Sanghavi, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Dr. Darshak Sanghavi is Chief of Pediatric Cardiology at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. His article, The Last Decision About Organ Donation and When Death Really Occurs, appears in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. We can hear you talk about this as well if you go to the Pat Morrison page at kpcc.org, where it's always open for business.
Weekdays on 89.3 KPCC.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is Owen Bennett-Jones with NewsHour. When President Sarkozy won power in...
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle.
Every afternoon on All Things Considered.
I'm Pat Morrison on 89.3 KPCC.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Tariq Gross.
Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal, the host of Marketplace. We like to say we're the business...
More NPR and local news than anywhere else. 89.3 KPCC.